This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Dental care in the United States is often lumped in with the idea of cosmetic work. We have health care, and then we have dental care, as if our teeth was separate from the rest of us. Dental care is expensive, prohibitive, and often incurs huge out-of-pocket expenses. Yet, we judge our fellow Americans by their health and look of their teeth. Straight white teeth are a mark of health and prosperity, while crooked or yellowed teeth are a mark of poverty and neglect. The struggle over oral health in the U.S. is a serious matter, intimately linked to poverty and inequality, as well as to social issues of shame. Writing about it in a new book is Mary Otto. She's an oral health topic leader for the Association of Healthcare Journalists. She was a writer about oral health, social issues, and poverty for the Washington Post for 8 years, and she now joins me to discuss her new book called Simply Teeth, the story of beauty, inequality, and the struggle for oral health in America. Welcome to the program, Mary.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, when I read your book, it occurred to me that we just don't question how we have taken for granted that straight white teeth, pearly whites, as we call them in the United States, is a phenomenon that is relatively new, this requirement that people have teeth that look perfect as a measure of their health is kind of a relatively new thing and kind of an American thing. How did it all begin? Is it basically Hollywood that has created this ideal for us that we all strive for?
Well, that's a good question. And in my reporting, I did find out that Hollywood does have a lot to do with it. But it even starts earlier than that with the invention. The first patent for a camera was actually awarded to a dentist in 1840, and it was the same year that dentistry became a profession here in this country. So the whole idea of this image of holding up a mirror to ourselves and judging ourselves in this kind of popular idea of beauty and dentistry have kind of shared this common thread for many, many years. But the Hollywood smile, that's a status symbol around the world, really did get its start in the Depression era Hollywood with a young dentist named Charles Pincus, who, like millions of other Americans, went to the movies in those days. And the movies were so popular because people just wanted to escape from the hardships of life, and they wanted to see something beautiful and spectacular up on the screen. And Dr. Pincus went to the movies too, and he saw these actors and actresses speaking, and some of them had imperfect teeth, he noticed. He said, oh, you know, a crooked teeth throws a shadow, you know, it's a bad thing to see up on the screen. So he invented these appliances. They were called Hollywood veneers, and even great movie stars like Shirley Temple would snap these little veneers on their natural teeth so they would look perfect all the time. And Shirley Temple, who became a star when she was about 6 years old, we never saw her lose her baby teeth. I mean, she was perfect all the time. And that sort of captured people's imaginations and set a new standard for how we should look. And what the modern cosmetic dentistry boom really took off in the 1980s with the invention of new kinds of veneers and products, and in the 90s with the proliferation of medical credit cards that help people pay for elective procedures, you know, without having the cash on hand.
So how did dental care become separated from health care, right? I mean, this becomes a political issue now, particularly with discussions around the Affordable Care Act and government subsidized health care and people's access to health care. Dental care is separate. Why?
It's another interesting thing I found out in my work. I'm in Maryland. It happened in Maryland in the year 1840. World's first dental college was established there. And The story goes, and it's kind of the creation story of American dentistry, that the two founders of the school, they were sort of self-trained or trained by the old-fashioned preceptorship system where you go and practice with someone who kind of knew the manual skills involved, and then you'd go off on your own and become a dentist. These two founders, Chapin Harris and Horace Hayden, went, the story goes, to the physicians at the medical college at the University of Maryland and asked if they could start a dental course there. And the physicians, as the story goes, said the subject of dentistry was of no interest to them. So the two dental school founders went off and started their own college, and it's a separate college of dentistry, and a whole separate profession kind of grew up around that educational system. They, you know, started a professional society for dentists and a peer-reviewed journal for scientific research. And it kind of led to the system we have today, which is a separate, mostly private practice system where dentists go to school to learn their profession, and they go out and set up private practices, or, you know, around the country. And the problem is, especially for people who lack resources or mobility or private benefits or money to pay for care, they sometimes have difficulty bridging that gap. It can take resources that I found out roughly a third of us in this country face barriers getting dental care for reasons including money.
Right. I mean, you point out in your book that huge numbers of Americans don't smile. They don't smile as a conscious act of shame about their teeth. This is horrifying.
It's very sad. That's true. A poll, you know, conducted on behalf of the American Dental Association revealed that a couple years ago, a third of low-income adults in America don't, you know, are reluctant to smile. And it does reflect a shame. We do tend to look at oral health, as you observed in the introduction, as through sort of a moral lens. It's like, oh, that person is a moral failure or an economic failure if they have missing teeth or crooked teeth or discolored teeth.
It's even sometimes seen as a mark of one's intelligence, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're successful, you have perfect teeth.
So let's talk about the fact that oral care in the United States is not just about cosmetics. It's not just about people wanting that Hollywood smile. First of all, if you do have imperfect teeth, it's harder to get jobs. It's harder to be employable. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you can die from untreated dental problems, like the child Diamante Driver that you write about in your book. So let's talk about that extreme case first. Who was Diamante Driver? What happened to him? And how did his case really jumpstart the modern discussion around access to dental care in America?
Diamante Driver was 12 years old. He was a schoolboy in Maryland, and he died almost exactly 10 years ago. And I met him before he died. He was in the hospital. He and his mom were there. He'd come home from school with a headache, and his grandmother had taken him to a hospital to see what was wrong. And he was diagnosed with sinusitis and a dental abscess, which is an infection. You know, it starts with a decayed tooth and the nerve becomes infected, and the gum boil forms. And he was sent home with some medicine, and he went back to school, but he got worse, and he came down with meningitis and ended up being rushed to a bigger hospital. And doctors told his mom that the infection in his tooth had spread to his brain, and he had two brain surgeries and 6 weeks of hospitalization and physical therapy, but none of it was enough to save him, and he did die. The tragedy, you know, I wrote about it in the Washington Post, and it occurred just not too far from the United States Capitol, and his story became a cause for the congressional delegation of Maryland and state lawmakers in the state house and locally, providers, children's advocates just took up this case and story, and it did raise awareness of the crucial nature, you know, of oral health and also the expense of care. I mean, Diamante's care cost $250,000, and so much preventive care could have been delivered to so many children who, you know, needed it for that amount of money, and it could have prevented Diamante's problems from ever occurring.
Why is dental care so expensive in the United States? What is it about the nature of that care? I mean, you have so many people that who might have dental health coverage who forego treatment. I've been in that position because the replacement of a cap or even just a simple treatment of a small cavity costs just ridiculous amounts of out-of-pocket money, hundreds and hundreds of sometimes thousands of dollars. Why is it so expensive?
It's hard to compare it to other kinds of medical treatments, which are also very expensive. I mean, they're delivered, these kinds of services are delivered by, you know, professionals who have, you know, high overhead costs. Most dentists graduate from dental school with like $250,000 worth of debt. Then they hire staff, rent a space, you know, it's all delivered in these private practice settings. Dental insurance doesn't always cover all of the costs. And you're right, dental care is one of the leading costs of medical debt in this country. Of course, preventive procedures are much cheaper, you know, and it's a really good example of an ounce of prevention being worth a pound of cure. But of course, you know,
you have to have insurance for that preventive care.
You do. And even private benefits don't cover all of the costs. And so you're right. It is no assurance that you won't face debts paying for your dental care.
And there are some clinics in the United States that hold these mass free dental clinics around the country that look like, the images from those look like they could be in a third world nation, you know, dental care as charity. What does that say about poverty and dental care in the United States?
Even the people who volunteer at these clinics, and they're amazing people, say they're just a Band-Aid, you know, that the system really does need to change in order to reach more people. I mean, a third of Americans face significant barriers getting routine dental services. So those are the folks who line up at these clinics. They sleep in their cars overnight. You know, a lot of them are suffering from toothaches and excruciating pain. And the only option left for them is to have these teeth extracted. It's just, you never forget being around so much pain. It's just, you never forget it. But yes.
And that goes hand in hand with the other kind of fear that people have of dental care. It's painful. And then if you let problems go untreated, it becomes even more painful. And people wouldn't let those problems go untreated as much if we had better access to dental care in the United States. Let's talk about the issue of shame and how we judge people by the, you know, straightness and whiteness of their teeth. How are job prospects impacted? How's people's employability impacted by the lack of dental care? I mean, you could have somebody who's basically done everything right, but because he or she doesn't have the couple thousand dollars to fix a missing tooth, they have a harder time getting a job to lift themselves out of poverty in the first place. I mean, we don't think of teeth as contributing to the vicious cycle of poverty.
But it really does, you know, it can lock you into a cycle of poverty, especially since many of the entry level positions and much of the job growth we experience are in the social, you know, the social sector. They talk about customer facing positions in the service industry, working at a counter at a, you know, restaurant or a retail shop. You know, the person who has all their teeth has an advantage getting that job and moving up through the chain to success. And those who don't are locked at the bottom. And they're not only condemned to stay at the bottom, but they're judged and stigmatized. I mean, there's something very depersonalizing about about this disease. It disfigures someone's, it disfigures the face, and that is seen as our, the seat of our humanity.
Do we need to change our standards for teeth as they relate to beauty? I mean, there's the issue of health and dental care that, you know, you absolutely need to have to simply be healthy. And then there are those cosmetic issues that somebody could have the problem teeth extracted and be perfectly healthy. But if they don't get the cosmetic fix, then are locked into poverty and might have to let their other teeth go as well. So do we need to sort of start rethinking how teeth relate to our standards of beauty? I mean, you would imagine that you couldn't win a beauty pageant if you had one crooked teeth, but that shouldn't be the case, or be a successful movie star, et cetera, or a TV anchor.
Just to remind ourselves that oral health is really part of overall health, I think that might take a little of the superficial focus and look at the deeper issues that are at work here. Think about this as part of our medical and health care, and appreciate beauty in its many forms. Maybe is I think that might add something to it. If we could just appreciate the look of a healthy smile, and it's like so many other things, maybe perfection isn't the same as health and well-being.
Right. So, Mary, let's talk about the government and government responsibility for the issue of dental care. This is so important given our nearly decade of debate and discussion over what healthcare reform should look like. Well, it's much more than even a decade of what healthcare reform should look like in the United States. Has dental care basically been given the shaft on government discussions of healthcare?
It seems like it always gets left out on some level. Even the Affordable Care Act, which tried harder than some programs, only included pediatric children's dental benefits as part of the essential health care coverage. Adult benefits were left out. And if you look back through history, it's been the case. Medicare, which covers over 50 million retired and disabled Americans, has never included routine dental benefits.
Wow.
And yeah, so when we retire, you know, if we don't go out and look for benefits and buy them or have the money to pay out of pocket for our care, you know, we will face very grave difficulties getting it. So,
and then actually, how does the story of Diamante Driver, going back to that, also link back? I understand that his family was on Medicaid. Which is basically the government funded healthcare program for low and for poor Americans. That also doesn't cover dental care?
Well, under Medicaid, and there are like more than 70 million of us Americans now covered by Medicaid, it covers poor families and poor individuals. It entitles children to care and has since a couple of years after it was signed into law by President Lyndon Johnson during his war on poverty. That doesn't mean all children get care. Like Diamante, fewer than half get routine care and fewer than half of dentists participate in Medicaid. Now, adults are not entitled to care under Medicaid. So poor adults, it depends on what state you live in, whether you're entitled to benefits, dental benefits, and some states have very scant dental benefits. A few have no dental benefits for adults under their Medicaid programs. And some states have fairly good benefits, but since they're not mandated by the federal government, they're subject to cuts, and often they're among the first things that end up on state budget chopping blocks during times of fiscal austerity. So just when people need them the most, they're the things that get cut. So it's a unstable situation for poor adults to get care under Medicaid.
Well, finally, Mary, in terms of what you would like to see as someone who's studied this issue for many years, what needs to happen on this issue of lack of access to dental care? What would be the ideal situation? There is a call by progressives for single-payer health care to cover all health care in the United States and basically Medicare for All program. But I don't recall us really talking in my conversations around it. Even I forget about whether dental care should be part of a single-payer program or not.
The most important thing, and there is a new conversation that's kind of starting around expanding, getting dental benefits into Medicare. So maybe that could be part of that larger conversation too. Mm-hmm. But just to keep making sure that oral health is part of any healthcare discussion seems like it would help move this conversation forward. Not forgetting it, not letting it get left out.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mary, for contributing to that conversation and making sure this issue doesn't get left out. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. Thank you.
Mary Otto is an oral health topic leader for the Association of Healthcare Journalists. She was a writer for the Washington Post for 8 years, where she wrote about healthcare and oral health in particular, as well as social issues and poverty. We've been talking about her new book, Teeth, The Story of Beauty, Inequality, and the Struggle for Oral Health in America. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.